the topic of my talk, high performance serverless Java on AWS. We can do it in German, but I apply it in English, so let's stick to it. But if you would like, you can also ask questions then in English. Yeah, my name is Vadim, and I'm Ukrainian native, but I live here around the corner in Bonn and work in Bonn. And I have these two passions, Java and serverless, and I'm one of the co-organizers of the Java user group Bonn here, and also AWS community builder in the serverless category. You can reach out to me via different channels. So first of all, who is here Java developer? Oh, okay, that's at least good, because sometimes I have different answers and then very difficult then to talk. Who has experience with AWS? Okay, less than a half. With serverless technologies? Even less and less people. If I will keep asking questions, no, nobody will raise their hands. So it's of course not the basic talk about AWS and serverless, but how to make Java work, or about the challenges that you will face and how make things work. So there will be some understanding required how to deal with things, but not so deep in serverless technologies. But first, let's start with the Java popularity as a language in general, and there are so many sources, completely different sources about it. Job posting, GitHub repositories, questions on different platforms about the language, but the answer is still the same. Java is among the top three programming languages. That's always some deviation, but JavaScript and derivatives like Node.js, TypeScript, Python and Java, there are somewhere in the top three. In general. Now let's look into the life of the Java serverless developer on the AWS, and it's really good. As I presented this last year, it was different, but at least we have support for Java long-term version 21 since November last year on AWS Lambda, so you can select it as a managed language. 1.5 years ago, we had still to stick with Java 11, and Java 17 was since 2 years there, and Java 21 around the corner. So it took time, but now Java 21 was released in September, in end of November. Lambda supported already Java 21. And AWS has its own fork, Amazon Coreto. They patch things out like OpenJDK adopt OpenJDK. So they just have their own stuff, and they guarantee a bit longer support for long-term releases. So they still support Java 8. And promise to support it until 2026. For good or bad, it's of course the question how long you would like to stick with that, but many applications still are not beyond Java 8, so that's good. And mainly speaking, AWS people behind this Amazon Coreto, so AWS takes this very seriously, this improving of Java experiences, not only on serverless like Lambda, but also on other stuff. Probably nobody needs to introduce James Gosling, who is basically father of Java, but also other people. I don't know, do you know Alexei Shipilev? He worked in Moscow for Oracle, then for Red Hat. He is the author of Shenandoah, a garbage collector, which is an open source collector, very known person in this Java world, and two others, Volker Simonis and Roman Kenke, are German native working for AWS. Just they are both in the compiler work involved, and we will see what has been produced there. So basically, Java is a very mature programming language, but if we will look into the serverless adoption, like how many Java Lambda functions are written in comparison to other to other programming language, and you see Java is still in the third place, but the adoption is very low. This is the comparison between the year 21st and this is the 23rd, so 1 year ago, and basically the Java adoption, so Lambda functions written with Java programming language are only around 10%. And this is something basically very frustrating situations, because Python and Node.js are quite ahead. And of course that has reasons. Why is it still so? And even we at AP Labs, I started 98 as a Java developer, and we have a huge backend in Java, but as we started to adopt Java on serverless 5 years ago, we figured out that it will not work, and we write a lot of TypeScripts and so on. But now there are improvements that you can use, but basically the train is a bit gone. Yeah, for those who started earlier, who now are thinking they have more choices, but others needed to decide years ago. So what are these challenges? So this is so-called cold start times. If you have public-facing applications and latency is crucial for you, that might bite you, depending on your pattern, how often you experience that. And sometimes it's also about the cost, because memory is important for Lambda function. It's a factor of cost. So about the cold starts, I will assume not everybody is aware how this Lambda function as a service is working. That's why I just would like to give some introduction, at least how this Lambda model works. So function as a service, Lambda as a container is only capable of serving one request per runtime, per environment. So this, the runtime spins off, just then the process one request, and then it just goes as a warm environment back kind of to the pool and stays here. It's different to the long-term environments like container as a service with the containers and servers. You can serve many requests and you scale it horizontally if you cannot process with one environment more. With a function as a service, it's one request per environment, basically. Yeah, and this means that you frequently need new environments and you need just to spin off these new environments, and spinning off has costs. Yeah. So when do you need the new environment? For example, you deployed your Lambda function for the first time. So you don't have an environment with that function. So you need to spin it off. This is the first one. For example, you have five warm containers, but you now need to serve seven requests in parallel. So you can reuse five of them, but two new, they are not there. So they need to be spinned off. And sometimes, even if you have enough warm environments, AWS will recycle them for the sake of patching. Security patching, operating system, JVM, and so on. So they are not staying forever, even if they are warm and you are serving them. So they don't publish how often it happens, but I tested every 2 hours, there will be shut down anyway of the existing environment. But this is something that can change. So what happens if you need the new environment? Like, so the first of all, it's kind of firecracker VM. AWS has its own solution. It's similar to Kubernetes. This is whole environments. These are containers, micro VMs that needs to be spinned off and coordinated. This is what AWS kind of developed Firecracker VM. So this new Firecracker micro VM needs to be spinned off. Then the code of your Lambda function, the business logic, needs to be downloaded from S3 for the newer environment. Then Lambda will start Java runtime as a programming language. And then the initialization phase of your Lambda function will need to kick off. So the classes needs to be loaded. The static initialization block of the Lambda function will be executed. Then sometimes we need runtime dependencies. If we use some frameworks, then just-in-time compilation will be kicked off. All these things are in these three phases, like download the code, start new execution environment, execute init code, and these three steps are cold starts, and they need to be executed in case we have the cold starts. And the last step is kind of warm start, the execution of the function itself. So if we have the warm environment, only this function will be executed, so the warm execution. If we run into the cold starts, then all four steps will be executed, and this first three are associated with some kind of costs. So what's important, if you configure the Lambda function, you can only assign the memory. And the CPU will be proportionally assigned. So you cannot adjust CPU and network bandwidth. So it's always basically the memory that you assign. So now let's a bit measure. This is kind of the application that I have. We have something similar even with Java written at work, but there are 200 Lambda functions, not four, but just for simplification use case, we have the simple application for creating and retrieving the products. We're having kind of things like photo products, and with that we have API gateway for serving public requests, and we have here a bunch of Lambda functions, create product, get all products, get product by ID, update products, and so on, and we store this in DynamoDB. It's not very important for this use case, but it's truly serverless, NoSQL database, and it's very good fit for serverless environment. And we have some kind of the stuff. I have simplified that, and I basically, for measurements, will use the function getProductById. Yeah, so what we will do here, I assigned to all Lambda functions 1 gigabyte of memory as a starting point. We have x86 hardware architecture. This is the default one. We have default HTTP client for talking to DynamoDB. This kind of application with all dependencies has 18 megabytes of size. I use some interesting compilation options. I maybe explained it earlier, later. And the experiment duration was to measure the performance, the cold starts and warm starts. That's all what we will do, was kind of 1 hour. I spinned off, I just had load test, which run kind of 1 minute, then I paused for 5 minutes, then I just put another load, and this I did this for 1 hour, and with that I had 100,000 functions invocation, so warm starts, and in that kind of 1 hour I produced kind of 100 cold starts. So you see this will be the measurements for cold starts and here for the warm start. So now let's measure without any optimization what we can get here. So now you see here the measurements. This is above cold starts, and this is warm start with Java 21. And you see here percentiles. For example, P90 means that in 90% of the cases, the result was, this is in milliseconds, more than 3,000 milliseconds or less in 90% of the cases. And here this is in 99% of the cases. So you got it. So basically, the first of all, the warm starts, the execution of the function itself, it's very quick. Java is a quick programming language. So this, yeah, you have here max values, I will explain then, but basically 20 milliseconds, 7 milliseconds, who cares? It's quick. But the cold starts, and it might happen in 1% of the cases, or 0.1% of the cases, depends on your pattern, invocation pattern, but the values are kind of behind 3 seconds. And this is quite a big number, yeah, because you need to sum up this one for the execution time, and it's also not the whole story. So the latency is measured, it's just from the time when I kind of start, create the request until the point I process the response fully. And what I showed you, the cold and warm starts, these are only two these things. Yeah, so overall latency for this kind of application will be just to create and send request. That's not very good. To the API gateway, and for creating requests, you need to establish HTTP connection. And this is DNS resolving SSL handshake, and all this stuff is also involved. Then API gateway needs to process requests, and only these two things that I showed you as a measurement, and an API gateway needs to process the response and deliver it back to the client, whatever client is. It can be backend application, it can be your browser processing the response. So basically all other steps, I just measured it, it adds between 200 and 500 milliseconds on top of these values. Yeah, this is your environment, it's your client, it's your internet connection, how quickly is that? But this is only for the Lambda function. So you basically also need to add between 200 and 500 milliseconds. So of course, these are quite big values. Probably you know the study of Google that if the request processing takes more than 1 or 2 seconds, then the people start to drop. Yeah, and basically if you have so many requests, and even if 0.1% of users, in case at least of cold starts, will drop, that can be business impact. It's just not a very good performance. And if you look into the cold starts of Node.js or Python, the values will be between 300 and 500 milliseconds. Nothing like 3 seconds and all that stuff. It's just Java is a kind of interpreted language, and that's kind of the problem. So, of course, there are ways to optimize it, and we will see how far we can get with the optimizations. And we will talk about general best practices, and then we will look into AWS SnapStart feature or solution and GraalVM native image, all with different trade-offs. I don't know if we will cover provision concurrency, but let's see. So first of all, it belongs to the best practices of each programming language, but everything that can be done in the static initializer block, even in the normal Java class, should be offloaded there, just not to do the same operation in the Lambda function itself. And in case here I am building DynamoDB client, it can be SQS, SNS, whatever you are using, this belongs to the static initializer block. Yeah, so don't do this multiple times, you can reuse this client. Another thing is you can optionally set the region value, region where you deploy your application in AWS. AWS can figure it out for yourself. They know where you deploy, but it takes several hundred milliseconds. So basically, if you have one region set up, like we have it in our company, you can simply set it. Yeah, simply say that's the region. In this case, it's US West. We are using the EU Central One here in Frankfurt. That's one of the things that you probably need to do. Another stuff is a bit complicated from the understanding point, but we will use this technique later. This technique name is priming. So what you can do with priming, you can preload things in the static initializer block. Just the thing is, in the static initializer block, you have generally more CPU. This is what AWS gives you for quicker setup. They give you more CPU power that you have in the Lambda function, so you can speed up things. So what we can speed up? This is something that you need to have a knowledge and understanding how the things work in order to think, is it something for you? Sometimes you cannot prime and preload anything, depending on your application. But in case we are talking to DynamoDB, there are two things known. So basically, this is the code for, if you don't know DynamoDB, it just doesn't matter. This is the code for get product by ID function if I talk to DynamoDB. Something like this, you establish the connection, and then you say get item from the table. This is the product table. So what happens if we talk to DynamoDB? We are talking via HTTP client. And there is a serialization taking place and deserialization. So the default HTTP client, and it doesn't matter, it's Apache, and Apache takes time, one time, for the initialization. It takes several hundred milliseconds for the first invocation of HTTP client. Behind the scenes, we don't need to do this. The second thing is, when we talk to Java in DynamoDB, we save JSON. So it needs to be serialized or marshaled or marshaled back. And also, this is the Jackson marshaller, which is used by default, and the first invocation is initialization of this HTTP JSON marshaller to Java marshaller is also expensive. So what we can do there, we can simply call this method getProductById with some ID like zero in the static initializer block. We have more CPU, we can preload things here. Yeah, so we are not even interested in the result. There might not even be the product zero in the database, but with that we can initialize, preload the client, HTTP client, we can initialize Jackson marshaller. And then kind of speed up things because we have more CPU, and we will be also looking what we can do with SnapStart with that. This is a bit noisy technique, but it helps. And it's only one method. We have this getProductById method anyway. So basically I will encourage you to measure that by yourself. I will explain because you can have different results. But now this is what explains this big value here for warm start. I did not use any priming first in my example, in this example. And this is what happened during the first warm execution of the function. That's why the value is big, because even with the first execution, HTTP client was loaded and Jackson marshaller was initialized. Yeah, if I don't do priming. I can do the priming and then the value will be somewhere here added, but a bit lower. So in this case, sometimes you ask why there are so big outliers. This is in case you can prime, but you don't do priming, and the first execution in the warm start phase can be also kind of slow. So once again, effect of priming, it's important to know if you can prime, but you don't do this. In case of cold start, even the execution of the function, the warm start, the first one, the only one, will be also slower. So, but basic recommendations for all this kind of serverless environments: don't use reflection, runtime code generation, proxies, dynamic class loading, all the stuff that we love from Spring Boot or Spring. They will bite you because it will increase the cold start, because everything will be happening in the initialization phase, like all this annotation processing and all the stuff that will increase the cold start significantly. So, what we can do about it? What are the solutions? So first of all, AWS 1.5 years ago introduced Lambda Snap Start. It doesn't have anything to do with Snapchat, if it's, in case this only this, the common Snap word. Basically, I wrote, and I'm currently writing the article series about it, where you can squeeze milliseconds of performance, so you can read it. I will introduce several techniques, but I have covered this online in much depth on Dev2. So basically, AWS SnapStart is the technology to improve startup performance. So the cold starts of the Lambda function for latency-sensitive application, and SnapStart is fully managed. By fully managed, what I mean, or AWS means, on per Lambda function, it's your choice. That's basically checkpoint. You activate it or not. It's up to you. You can say, I would like to apply SnapStart to the Lambda function. That's basically it. This is the configuration. You can do it in infrastructure as code. Of course. So even if SnapStart doesn't have Java in its name, currently it's only available for Java managed runtimes on Lambda functions, so Java 11, 17, and 21. And who knows, maybe it will remain so, because with Java there are many more things possible as with other runtimes. So it's not available for other Lambda runtimes. For example, you can deploy Docker container with Lambda and have Java application there, but you cannot apply SnapStart. It's only for poor managed Java runtime. So what is this fire? What is that SnapStart? SnapStart is doing the firecracker. This the whole environment, micro VM, micro VM, create snapshot and then restore snapshot. We'll be talking about this. This is the whole environment, the whole execution environment, meaning operating system, JVM, and your application. At least. And if you enable SnapStart for the Lambda function, then it will divide that in two different steps. So let's wait several seconds. So first of all, if you enable SnapStart and you deploy your Lambda function, there will be some magic happening during the deployment phase. So first of all, if you deploy the function, you only deploy it normally. But if you activate SnapStart, the static initialization of the Lambda function will take place additionally. These are additional steps. Then there is the optional hook. We will be talking about this. And then the snapshot of your environment will be created. This is firecracker snapshot during the deployment phase. Of course, the deployment phase will take longer. We will show you the measurements. And then in the invocation phase, the snapshot will be restored first, and then your function will be executed or invoked. So what's the promise? The promise is that the restore of the snapshot is taking less time than the cold start. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. You can go with normal cold start. Yeah, and this snapshot restore phase is quicker. So there are snapshots, there are hooks. We will be talking about this later, but this is kind of the managing, so, and what happens then, if the snapshot is taken of the whole Firecracker VM, it will be encrypted and stored on S3 on your behalf. It's completely managed. You don't need to do anything, but this is how it works. And it's then there is a low tiered cache for this. I will explain it later. And of course, the snapshot will be stored in each availability zone of your region. This is how AWS does everything. It's just, in case one availability zone is not available, then the snapshot can be anywhere restored. So basically, more or less, it's only checkbox. Who of you heard about Creo and Crack? Oh, Crack? Okay, only one person. So how this relates? Because this sounds similar to what Creo does. Creo stays for checkpoint restore in user space. And this is a technology available in the Linux space since 12 years, and it's basically was developed for moving containers around from one machine to another, yeah, simply by snapshotting the similar things. So Firecracker VM is different. It's not based in Creo, it's doing similar thing. So the Firecracker snapshots the whole running operating system, the whole running environment. Creo snapshots a single process or container. That's basically the difference. But there are disadvantages and advantages of both. So with Firecracker, you don't need to worry about file handle. If you move something with the Opal file handle to another machine, with Creo, you will. And that's basically what is the difference. There is also crack kind of now more or less experimental. It works with Creo, and crack is basically for more or less snapshotting the GDK and restarting the GDK. Yeah? This is currently not available on Oracle GDK, OpenGDK. You need to have the crack-aware GDK. For example, Azul systems, they provide this GDK with this capability, so you cannot use it normally. But these are completely different technologies. The thing is, I showed you these optional hooks. So before the snapshot is taken, you can invoke some hook. And after the snapshot is restored, you can invoke some hook. These hooks are based on the crack API, but in the snap start, but it doesn't have anything to do with crack itself. They only support the crack API, which gives you two additional methods. And basically, now we are back to priming. I explained you can preload things. Now what you can do with these hooks. So this hook implements this resource interface. You need to have dependency to org crack. You need to register this class. This is a lambda function get product by ID. This copy more or less this line. We register this lambda function as a crack resource, and it gives us two methods: before checkpoint, before snapshot, and after restore. So in the after restore, I don't do anything, but in this before checkpoint. So once again, we can prime preload things with this call to DynamoDB with fake call, basically get product by ID. I can preload all the classes involved. I can warm up HTTP client, and I can warm up JSON marshaller. And if I do this before the snapshot is created, then this pre-warming is already part of the snapshot. And if I the snapshots will be restored, the things are already there. And once again, this method before checkpoint will be executed in the deployment phase. So the execution, the lambda invoke is not involved here. So I speed up things in the deployment phase. I preload as much as possible in this snapshot in order to gain performance during the execution. And this is something where the priming really shines. But of course, you need to know what you need to prime. If you need to concatenate two strings, there is nothing that can be primed, probably. Yeah? So what can you prime? Just nothing that pre-warmed or loaded, but in many AWS scenarios, you're working with some kind of SQS, SNS client. They are all HTTP-based. They all do some kind of marshalling, so you can do these things, and we will see the impact of this. Basically, there is from AWS officially released prime guide, so you can look into this and see what can be primed or what's efficient to prime. Basically, you are not forced to do priming like get product by ID. You can also ask metadata of each table. That's the same. You will create HTTP connection to the table. You will warm up the serialization. So, but for me, as I have already get product by ID method, it's simply easier to invoke. There is a really nice talk in the InfoQ conference by Mike Danilo from AWS. He explained AWS Lambda under the hood, and he especially explain how the snap start was implemented. I can encourage you, that deserves the whole talk, 45 minutes, how the things are working behind the hood. Of course, also AWS snap start has challenges and limitations. For example, once again, it only supports Lambda. Deployment phase with snap start enabled then takes 2.5 minutes because it takes time to create snapshot, to secure snapshot and store it in all availability zones, so it has price of additional 2.5 minutes in the deployment phase. Yeah, this is something that you need to be aware of, and SnapStart currently doesn't support several things like provision concurrency. ARM architecture it supports now since 1 month. You cannot use NFS-based system, so like Amazon Elastic File System. You can only use S3 basically. So these are the things that you need to be aware of. So for us, it's not a problem. We don't use that all. But in case you have NFS, then it currently doesn't work. So now let's measure what will it bring. So now first we measure call starts. And this is in case this is the without snap start. This is a call start without snap start. this is with SnapStart, and this is a SnapStart and additional DynamoDB priming that I showed you. And these are once again P90. So this one I showed you previously, and this is what you can achieve by simply activating SnapStart and not writing any additional code. So you see, for example, P90 goes from 3.3 seconds to 2.5 seconds. In case you do this DynamoDB priming in P90, the call start goes down to 1 second. It's significantly, yeah, from 3.3 to 1 second, just 67% improvement for this use case. Of course, if you cannot prime, the values are still higher, and so on. So for a warm execution, basically the only one thing changes, if I have priming, this the max value will be low, because the max value is here high because I did not apply priming. And in case I just prime DynamoDB invocation, everything is already in the snapshot. And that's why the things are, even the max values are now went down. But this is significant. So basically, with that, we can even stop and say, okay, this, I think with 1 second call start plus several milliseconds and all that around, you can have, in case of call start, now response time something like 1.5 seconds. And I think that's okay. I mean, call start doesn't happen frequently, but you can explore several things. I will quickly iterate. You can, I gave this Lambda function 1 gigabyte of memory. It's up to you just to check if having more memory will bring you more results, because having more memory will activate more CPU. It's proportional. For example, if I double the memory, then the CPU cycles are also double. So maybe you can have quicker processing with that. And the cost may remain basically the same, because the Lambda pricing is based on memory and execution time. You raise the memory, the execution time can go down due to more processing, more CPU. So that can be a balance. So I measured here a lot. This is without SnapStart first. I just measured with different memory settings up to 2 gigabytes. But basically, my personal experience was, in many, many situations, 1 gigabyte produces the best trade-off. This is without SnapStart. The warm starts was the same. This is with SnapStart, but without priming. So you see, adding more memory doesn't improve things drastically. Having less memory, I have higher call starts. So basically, with 1 gigabyte, I had, I would say, the best experience. So and the same was also with priming. But with priming, the differences between, for example, here, having less memory, were not so much noticeable. So I could here go with 768 megabytes, save a bit of money, because the performance is comparable. So it's up to you. This is a very simple use case. You can measure it for your use case. It's also known that having bigger deployment package produced bigger call start times prior to SnapStart. It was always the same because, yeah, in the call start phase, the package needs to be downloaded. The bigger the package, the longer it takes. And also, the bigger the package, the more initialization work. I thought, okay, I would like to check and test it for will the SnapStart activation change here something, yeah? Because maybe restore phase is not so much dependent on the package size, but it still is. So I had tested this for very small application, only several kilobytes like Hello World. The green one is medium, 18 megabytes like this one, and I also just produced a bigger application with 50 megabytes, this yellow one. And you still see the same thing, even with priming, even with SnapStart, or even with SnapStart and priming, the bigger the package, the bigger the call starts. So it's still there, so it's not so much noticeable, but of course it's still there, so the best practice will be just include only the dependencies that you need. Yeah, so sometimes in the long living applications, we package so many things that we don't need because they will be initialized once and then the application may run for weeks. We need to pay attention especially use only AWS dependencies that we need. Just don't package anything like JUnit and all that stuff. It just increases that. So I will jump over other stuff. I tested some AWS specific things like packaging the stuff with Lambda layers. You may not be familiar with that, but basically using Lambda layers increased call start, so it won't show you, it won't bring you anything new. I also tested with different Java compilation options. People know Java know that default compilation is tiered compilation. This is something best world between client and server compilation, C1 and C2. But basically with Lambda, it's the situation that we don't need client server compilation C2 because it just-in-time compiler produces the best result optimization after, for example, function has been invoked 10,000 times. And maybe your environment will never invoke the function so many times because it will be recycled before that. And that's why you will not reach that peak optimization. That's why it's worth testing if, for example, default tiered compilation is the best result, or you will stop here on level one with client one and profiling. So, because additional compilation also takes CPU, because it takes thread and CPU time, and for short living Lambda function, it may not be the good. So basically, the results were that with tiered compilation and with the stop at level one, I had the best results. So basically, even with the default one tiered compilation, you can go now safely, so you don't need to change anything. But basically, you see this stop at level four, this is the client compilation has the worst call starts. Yeah, and this is kind of logical for Lambda environment, and it's not logical for others. I also tested with different Java garbage collection algorithm. Basically, the insight is stick with the G1 default. All others that you have, Parallel, Shenandoah, they will produce higher cold start and warm start time. So with Lambda, with default one G1, you are good to go. So also. And the difference is quite significant. I couldn't imagine that the cold starts could be 200-300 milliseconds more by at least default settings of others. But basically also the same here, don't change anything. This is quite interesting because when we talk to DynamoDB or SQS, SNS service, this is once again, it happens with the client, and this client talks via HTTP. And even if we don't set HTTP client, the default one will be Apache in case of AWS. Yeah, they bundle it and package it by default. But there are two other options. There is a URL connection HTTP client, so URL connection client that you can test, and AWS has produced its own CRT client, which is good, very well suitable for short-living runtimes like Lambda, because Apache and URL connection, they are more for web applications. Once again, it takes several hundred milliseconds to initialize, but then it runs forever. But for Lambda, for short-living functions, it's not a good choice. So I also tested kind of with all the three, just to figure out what could, just to measure it. And this is P90 values. Basically, you really see that this green one, AWS CRT, outperforms for the cold start, this red one, which is default, Apache, and this green one, or this red one is URL connection, and the green one is Apache. Of course, here we see with the priming, the results are quite close because we prime HTTP client. We pre-initialize it before creating the snapshots, so the results are logically quite close. And this AWS CRT client was released before SnapStart was released. So now if you can prime things, then the results will be quite close and you don't need to set another HTTP client. And basically the same story is also for warm start phase. I will jump over this because asynchronous invocations, you can use asynchronous HTTP client, but then you need to have asynchronous programming across all your application that has different trade-offs. What now happened, or what does it mean now? 1 month ago, SnapStart was only possible for default hardware architecture x86, and it wasn't possible for ARM64 architectures. Now AWS changed that, you can apply both. The thing is that ARM64 architecture, if you select ARM64, then the Lambda costs are 25% lower. yeah, this is the ARM processor and it's cheaper. The question will be, yeah, once again, it's now possible, if we will use ARM, what we will gain or not gain. AWS says you can gain up to 30%. It's not what, at least in this use case, my measurement show. But now you see, if I use ARM architecture for my example, I have here, without priming, 8% higher call start, without snap start, with snap start 24, and with snap start and priming also 25% higher call start. But for the warm start, the difference is quite low, only 9%, 10%, and 4%. So the cold starts are 25% higher, but the warm starts are only 10% higher for 25% less costs. So now it's up to you. Yeah, you can say, okay, I just can accept more for less price, or you can assign more memory to the ARM architecture. It will probably, you will have comparable results, but it may be cheaper. Yeah, if you assign 10% more memory, which is 25% cheaper, and have the same results, you now can have the trade-off. But of course, it's kind of interesting, because you don't always have ARM processors to test it locally and so on, but generally Java is right once run everywhere. So you can develop locally and then simply say in the infrastructure as code, I would like to have ARM architecture. So this is something new. This is the first time I show this measurement, and basically you can do a lot with that. So here, once again, also one interesting observation. I changed the lambda function before my measurement, so I kind of measured from the publishing of the lambda function, everything that I showed you. So I showed you the first 100 cold starts and all that stuff. And I told you that there is this low-level tiered cache. And if you measure, for example, you change the lambda function and measure the first cold start with snap start, it will be quite high. Then you measure the second time, it will be lower. Then you measure that the third time, it will be also lower. And I was just puzzled, what is that? And this is due to this effect of this tiered cache of this snapshot. And it's designed like Docker layers. There are different layers of this cache. And I once again reference to this talk of Mike Danilov from InfoQ. He explains how they designed this cache. It's truly science also for me. But basically, think of that. The snapshot of the Lambda function can be taken, and the Lambda function can run for 1 year. But the whole environment is not static, because AWS will patch operating system of the Firecracker. They will patch minor version of Java runtime. Yeah, they patch it beneath. You cannot change it. It will be simply patched. And they designed the cache that they don't need to revalidate your snapshot completely, in case they patch, but your code stays the same. So very complex technologies, because if they will invalidate the snapshot too often, then you will lose performance, yeah, and all that stuff. And that's the case. If I show you the values for the first execution, and they are there, it's kind of the higher values. So here, I think I measured, what I measured here. So basically, if I only measure from this 100 first invocations of the cold start, only the last 50, then the cold starts are even lower, because this restore phase will become quicker. Only the first 10, 20 executions, invocations are slower, and then we have stable performance for that. So basically, even to be honest, the cold starts are even lower, starting from 20th execution and so on. And sometimes you have so many executions, and this tiered cache will survive, completely revoke of the new container and all that stuff. So basically, the values are even better. But just for understanding, I measured it from the beginning. So basically, you can, for P90, you can even go. You see here with the last 15 invocations, 700 millisecond call start time. So I think we can live with that, but let's explore GraalVM and what can we have there. I hope everybody at least heard about GraalVM just 6-7 years as it's there. it has so many goals, but what's important for us is this GraalVM compiler, which gives us the opportunity to produce native image. So this is ahead of time compilation, and GraalVM compiler gives you the choice between just in time and ahead of time. With ahead of time, we need to package everything that we will be using throughout the life cycle and produce the native image. And GraalVM itself supports Windows, Mac, and Linux. And yes, this is the trade-off. And you see ahead of time compilation is well suited for start time speed, low memory, and small packaging. These are the properties of the serverless functions, basically. Yeah? And just in time is for long living application like web servers. But we have here the choice. The thing is, of course, GraalVM is not supported by Lambda. You cannot find manage GraalVM there. You only find manage Java 21, the classical one, not the GraalVM one. But what Lambda supports is custom runtime. And with custom runtime, you can deploy native images as well. Yeah, this is basically you upload the function zip, yeah, the zipped function, which has to contain the file with the name bootstrap. In the case of GraalVM, the bootstrap is the native image of your application. And then it works out of the box. And I did that. You see here the examples to my GitHub code on all the slides. They are below. And I measured this also with 1 gigabyte of memory and added this result. So you can see Lambda function without snap start, with snap start, but without priming. With SnapStart and DynamoDB priming, and this is GraalVM native image. So this is the cold start, and you see with P90 half of the second. So these are more or less the best results you can get in terms of cold start with GraalVM native image. If you don't use Spring and all this stuff. If Spring, then it's a bit different, but I don't use here any Spring stuff. That's another topic. P90, so 500 milliseconds. That's very competitive. And also for warm start times, you see here the until P99, the GraalVM outperforms even in many cases, or even the warm start, and even for the max values, P99.9 or max of 100,000 invocations, you see GraalVM is really top. You can also do the same test with different memory settings. I think it's only not only P90, but the cold start with the GraalVM, you can for sure go with less memory as with 1 gigabyte. Yeah, you see that the performance drop is even not measurable in the cold start. So you can assign less memory, have less costs. For the warm start, is the same. And you can see the example of application on my GitHub. So GraalVM is for sure really powerful without any things just mentioned, but it also has its challenges. For example, AWS custom runtime, so how you can deploy GraalVM, only supports Linux executables, even if the GraalVM supports also Mac and Windows. So you need Linux machine to produce that. So you cannot do something locally, but with cloud, it's probably not a bigger problem. I needed between 6 and 10 gigabytes of memory locally to produce GraalVM image. So now think if you are producing many of them in parallel, it shifts the significant cost to the CI/CD that you use. So you will probably have something in the cloud that spins automatically or locally, but this requires really thinking about how you will do CI/CD and what will cost you. Build time was also the factor I mentioned with the snap start. It took deployment phase, took 2.5 minutes, the same time it takes to produce the native image. So it breaks a bit developer experience. So now, if you would like to test these technologies locally, it takes time before you can see even the small change. Yeah, so maybe it's not something that you would like to test locally, just to be aware of. And of course, there is this ugly thing with GraalVM native image. You can run into problems if there is some dynamics happening in the program, like you need to instantiate classes by reflection. Ahead of time compilation doesn't work like this. You need to preload everything. So basically, and for example, Lambda function will be instantiated. It's the name in infrastructure as code, so it will be loaded per reflection. And with that, you need to kind of configure this reflect JSON and put all the classes there that will be loaded by reflection. It's not a huge work. If you run sometimes into the problem, you know what these classes will be. For example, this is all entities like product, because they will be serialized, deserialized from JSON. Yeah, dynamically, so you need to put everything. So this is one-time effort, but you need to think about it. Otherwise, you will have runtime error. And this leads to the situation that GraalVM has the page here, libraries and the frameworks that they say are that you won't have any effects with GraalVM native image at runtime. So they say Micronaut, Quarkus, Spring, Helidon are tested with GraalVM. So there are no reflections happening in these libraries and all the dependencies from these libraries, so they are safe to use. And they also has a list of individual open source projects and their versions that are also battle tested. Because you know you have the open source, you use open source version which brings 25,000 other dependencies that you don't control, basically. Yeah? And if one of the dependencies has something like dynamic class loading, then it will not work, basically. But of course, you need to pay attention because you don't only use these frameworks. You can use individual ones, and they may not be kind of working out of the box. And then you need to figure out and then just configure these files, these classes additionally, that they will be loaded. So, and of course, then you need to pay attention if you switch the version of the open source project, upgrade this, then it can be different behavior. Yeah? It can be different class loaded on your behalf. So you should be quite careful with testing of those things. Okay, we'll jump over this things. So basically, I also write the article in case you don't like DynamoDB, and many people don't like NoSQL databases. That's normal stuff. You can use relational database, or at least serverless flavors, because there are issues with connection management and databases. If you use Lambda and relational database, I just write the articles how you can mitigate that once again. And also, there are really many companies who are very heavy on Spring Boot. And I also kind of write the article how you can make that work. You will have higher call start times for sure, 200-300 milliseconds more. But basically, it's possible also to achieve, and there are many open source projects helping you. So wrap up and suggestions. So with SnapStart and GraalVM, okay, it's not Spring Boot application, with Lambda, you can have acceptable values. Acceptable, I mean something around one, call start around 1 second. You can work with that. If you are willing to accept slightly higher cold and warm start, I will simply say start with a SnapStart. It's very simple. It's just activation and it works. Yeah, I don't need to do it, it's managed. In case you say it's so sensitive, so performance sensitive, and you would like to stick with Java, then explore GraalVM native image. You will save another 200-300 milliseconds, but with another trade-offs. Yeah, this reflection, this all image creation stuff will be up to you then. Yeah, and this is what I really like with SnapStart. It's really completely managed. They manage the snapshot. They manage the what snapshot belongs to what Lambda version. If you have two in parallel for the, it's really huge work behind the scenes that I really appreciate. Maybe the last. Probably you heard about Project Layden, which is currently making a bit noise in Java community. This comes from Oracle itself. They would like to reduce start type of GDK anyway, and even improve time to peak performance and memory setting. But basically, if you know what is CDS, class data sharing in Java, this will be based on this. And I saw only the metrics, now early metrics, that they will only save you 50% of the cold start time and all that stuff. So with SnapStart, you can do more. Yeah, this is what's currently doing in managing this class data sharing. So you start the application, you should make the snapshot of this class data sharing and then start the application with that snapshot. It's not very easy on Lambda. Yeah, it should be done similar to SnapStart, but SnapStart will not support this probably. So I personally don't think it may be something for containers, but for serverless, I don't think that it will lead to improvement, or you will have too much work on your shoulders. So once again, word of caution: remeasure everything. You can check out my examples. start measurement and say, I have different results for exactly the same application. How is that possible? So once again, I tested this throughout the last months, but if you will measure now, there will be another minor version of Java 21. Yeah, so Amazon patches it. As I tested 3 weeks ago, it was the version 18 of Java 21. I measured this with 10. So there may be changes in JVM itself. Of course, snapshot create and restore can be improved behind the scenes. I hope improved and not making the results worse. So there can be things that why you will have another results. For example, Firecracker VM improvements. Now GraalVM, I tested with Java 21. You can take GraalVM 22 now, because it goes with the Java version, and 2 months later, 1 month later, 23, there may be also improvements. And of course, there are servers behind Lambda, so there is this Java memory model. You can hit L caches or RAM. So basically, you can have slightly different values, but the relationship will be always the same that you will have with SnapStart and all the things. So this is more or less the suggestion how it like goes. So basically, I would say, of course, you will not reach the values of JavaScript and Node.js, what cold starts means. You will never have 200 milliseconds and 400 milliseconds. It takes additional work to have 700, 800 milliseconds. But I think these are more or less acceptable, or much better acceptable as we had 2 years or 3 years ago, 3.5 seconds. At least. So there is nothing against using Java and all that stuff. If you have knowledge and investing in all programming languages like Rust, it's also a huge investment. So you can stick with that. Yeah, this is basically what I wanted to tell you. I hope you took something with you. You can try things now out and just produce your measurements. And now I'm happy to take questions. I saw 5 minutes mark was reached. Even 4 minutes, 3 minutes. Okay. What questions do we have? Okay. Micro? Ah, okay.
Hi. Hi. Thank you a lot for your talk. My question would be, with other programming languages, does SnapStart also work there?
No.
No, so it's only Java.
Only Java.
Okay. Well, that was my question.
I expect it could come with .NET, so with .NET later. Yeah, because it suffers from the same problems and has comparable high cold start without SnapStart. Yeah, I don't think it makes sense for Python because restore takes time. Yeah, you don't want to make it slower.
I guess as an instantiation of a Lambda only serves one request, virtual threads don't impact the performance, right?
I will also assume, I wanted to test that at least with Spring 3 because they support it out of the box. You can say use virtual threads and test. I will assume it will not bring too much.
Okay,
yeah, because it's not multiple per container, it's one-to-one relationship. So I also don't know what can be better, but I always measure. It's with the same was with the garbage collector. I could not assume that it can be an impact.
So you said for dependency injection to be quicker, it would be good to select a framework that does not do it with reflections. Can you name drop common frameworks that do not do it with reflection? Is it Quarkus? Does Quarkus not do it with reflection?
Also, Micronaut doesn't do it. So once again, I do now the same measurement for Spring Boot. You can read on Dev2. I will post the links here, the articles. You can use SnapStart with that frameworks, and you can use GraalVM with Spring Boot. But once again, you will have 200 to 300 millisecond higher cold starts with that frameworks anyway. Yeah. So then you will be above 1 second, and you need to think: would you like to use that or not? Yeah.
It will be
quicker, yeah, because I mean with SnapStart you need to preload all that stuff anyway, yeah, and with GraalVM it has annotation processor, Spring Boot native support has annotation processor which offloads annotation processing into the pre-native build phase, yeah, but still my test revealed that at least for Spring Boot, the cold starts are with snap start and GraalVM2 until 200-300 milliseconds higher. But if you are very productive with Spring anyway and everything is Springified, maybe it just doesn't bite you, 200-300 milliseconds. The situation is, of course, if you don't use SnapStart and GraalVM, then the cold starts of the Spring Boot application will be 7 seconds. This is what I measured, and with 7 seconds cold start, if it's asynchronous processing, then it's fine. But for public-facing application, you will probably not accept that. Yeah, but with SnapStart and GraalVM, it works better, at least much better. I saw that it should be the end. Okay, then the recording is stopped, you mean? Okay. Okay, yeah, thank you.